Anything on your heart this morning?
Well, I would appreciate your prayers. We have been struggling a little bit with some chest congestion. Cindy's got bronchitis, has bronchitis pretty badly. She's been coughing really bad all week. She's doing better, but she didn't want to come and disturb everybody. And, that's been kind of hanging on. And it seems like that she uses all of her energy up in about the first hour that she's up, and then she just wants to lay around the rest of the day. Of course, our dog likes that because he likes to jump up on the couch with her. But at any rate, we appreciate your prayers this morning. Hopefully we won't lose our voice as we try to get into a message. My subject this morning is going to come from the book of Daniel in the first chapter. The book of Daniel, the first chapter. This may be a little different than the way that I normally preach, but we're going to do some exegesis of that particular chapter. There's some objects in there, some subjects that I'd like to address. And my message this morning is one of those practical messages that I talked about last week. And it's primarily directed to the young people. But there's lessons certainly in here for us older ones as well. But I would particularly like to ask our young people to listen this morning. Some of you are still in school. Some of you are out of school and perhaps in college or whatever. And some have already started out into your career. And certainly it's a way of life. We bring our children up at home with the intent of preparing them as best we can for what they're going to face when they go out into the world. But as Brother Ken mentioned in his preliminaries, it's tough out there, and it's getting tougher all the time, each and every generation, it seems. And so the title of my message this morning is Life's Challenge for the Youth. Life's Challenge or Challenges for the Youth. And even though we live in an age that when I was young, it would have been impossible to imagine how closely that the world has been brought together through communication, not just the telephone, but the cell phone, the internet, the Twitter and Twitter or whatever it is, I hardly ever use it, Facebook, all of that social media. And we see there's good things, but there's bad things as well about it. As we all, if we listen to the news at all, we know that the wicked of this world, those that we would label as terrorists, and truly that's what they are, their intent is to destroy our way of life. They use that same technology, and so to their benefit and to our destruction. But our young people face a whole different world than what their parents and grandparents like us could possibly imagine. But that's not anything new. The technology and the fast pace of the world may be different, but certainly young people in every age have had to face new challenges and difficulties that come their way. As I said, I want to use the first chapter of the book of Daniel. I think I'm going to go ahead and read through that chapter, and then we're going to come back and kind of break it down a little bit because there's some important points in this that we want to understand. So let's begin at the first verse of the first chapter of the book of Daniel, and we'll read through the end of that chapter. It's not that long, but it sets the stage for the rest of the book, and certainly it provides us with the background that we want this morning to talk about the challenges for our young people. It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of wine, which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now, among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the princes of the eunuch gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and unto Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse like liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me in danger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and he proved them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for those 4 children, God gave them knowledge and skill in understanding and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. Now, that's the background reading that we're going to talk a little bit about this morning. But if I were to pick a verse for a scripture text, that verse would come from the book of Psalms in the 37th chapter and the 25th verse. And it says, I have been young and now I am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his children begging bread, or his seed begging bread. Now you think about that. David wrote that psalm and he said, I was young, but now I'm old. But this thing I have never seen, and that is the righteous forsaken, nor their seed or children begging for bread in the streets. That this morning we'd like to hold as a background thought. Now, first of all, I'd like to take a look at the history behind this. The first 2 verses of this chapter give us a little bit of the history of what has been going on, and that's important. History is important. It's important for us to understand the things that have preceded us and the things that have brought us to where we are. Our young people, who are many of them preparing to go out into the world, the world that they're going to face and the things that are out there had a historical operation that brought them to where they are. The state that our nation is in right now, in its moral condition, and the things that we face in terms of the enemies that are trying to destroy our way of life. There's a background to that. There are things that led up to that. And if we understand those, many times it can help us as we begin to face the obstacles that are before us. Now, It says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Now, how did they get to this point? These young men are now captives in a foreign land about 800 miles away from their homeland. Now, 800 miles back then was a long way. It was the other side of the world. And how did they get there? Well, it didn't just happen overnight. Just as things that we're involved in today and things that our children will be involved in didn't just happen overnight. This has been a process that has brought them to that. Now, if you read secular history, and you study your history books and read all the things that have happened from ancient times down to now, they're written from man's perspective. And they'll usually say that such and such an individual did such and such a thing, and this king did that, and that king did that. And it's always written from the perspective of the human of the human being. But the scriptures are different. Historically, they're accurate. That's been proven time and again. And everything that the scripture tells us about certain historical events that happen, we can line them up with secular history. But you'll notice in the scripture that particularly that it always recounts history as being within the realm and the plan of God, because that the scriptures recognize that God created this universe, that God is in charge of it, and nothing happens outside of God's knowledge or God's allowing it to happen or God's being involved in it happening. And as you read through scriptures, you'll see that God's hand is involved in everything. And I can tell you, folks, that the things that are transpiring now, if it were to be written, and as they will be written from a historical standpoint, God will be left out of it. But those who know God and those who relate to the next generation the things that have happened and the things that continue to happen, they will bring God in and show their children that God has been involved in that. As America begins to diminish on the world stage, and it is, folks, it is, you can see that America's influence for good, its influence for the things of God, are diminishing as we see other nations rising up. We see the moral condition of America getting worse and worse, and becoming more and more like the rest of the world, that many of those countries have already forsaken God. And as we see that diminishing, and we see the other players on the world stage rising, it's only a matter of time until that God brings judgment upon America. And when it comes, be assured God has given America every opportunity, just as Israel was given opportunity. We have a little snapshot right here of about 3 years of history in this chapter. We know that because these young men were taken in to be educated for 3 years before they appeared before the King Nebuchadnezzar. And so it's just a snapshot of 3 years. But it says that Nebuchadnezzar, in the third year of Jehoiakim, the king, besieged Jerusalem. Well, who was Jehoiakim and how did they get in that condition? Well, already 10 tribes of the nation of Israel had been carried off nearly 200 years before this. And time and again, God had sent prophets. Time and again, God had raised up a revival in the land to get the people to turn away from their wickedness, to turn back to God. And each time God said to them, if you don't turn from your wicked ways, if you don't turn back to me, eventually your land is going to be overrun and you're going to become subjects to those who of other nations who will overpower you. Because the only strength that you really have lies in me. That's what God told them. And we see, if we look at the history of Israel, that there were good men that rose up as leaders. As a matter of fact, one of those was Hezekiah. We'll talk about Hezekiah a little bit more. But Hezekiah lived about 100 years or so before these events took place. And already God had told Hezekiah and the people through the prophet Isaiah that if they did not turn from their ways, that eventually that the nation of Babylon would overtake them. It took 100 years for that to happen, and it was a lengthy process. God's judgment doesn't always come at the snap of a finger, but you can be sure that the things that God says will transpire will happen. And the scriptures record that. We have the book of Kings, we have the books of Chronicles, we have those things that record the events of the kings of Israel and the things that transpired and the wars that took place, how that the people left God and forsook God and began to worship idols. All of this, all the time, God will say to them that if you don't change your ways, eventually your nation will be lost. And here in the book of Daniel, we find that it came to pass. These young men, through no fault of their own, were taken captive and taken into a moral land, or into a foreign land. What we see in the nation of Israel, if you read the other books of the Bible and see where they were, they had become so morally repugnant to God that He didn't even honor their worship. Oh, they thought the temple was great. They put all their trust in the temple and the building itself, but their hearts were far from God. Their hearts had turned away from God, and because they put their trust in external worship rather than living a righteous life, God brought judgment upon them. And even from this point that we read where Nebuchadnezzar took over and came into Jerusalem and besieged it, it was another 18 years from that point, and two more uprisings and turning from God. And when we put those pieces together, we find it was 18 more years down the road before Nebuchadnezzar went back in and besieged Jerusalem again. And this time, he didn't leave one stone left upon another, but he destroyed and burnt the whole city, and he tore that temple, the temple in Jerusalem, to the ground. And so all of this had happened and led up to this, and these four young men, through no fault of their own, were carried captive into a foreign land. And so that is the reality of life. Not all situations in life that you're going to face are fair. Not all of them are your doing. Many of them you may inherit because of the missteps of your ancestors. That's exactly what these young men inherited. They had inherited captivity because not of anything that they had done, but because of the continued missteps of their ancestors. And there's no question, folks, that the moral condition that America is in today is not all the fault of this generation. My generation is just as much to blame, if not more, than the generation that currently is out there, because when the warnings came, we didn't heed it. We didn't turn from those things as we should. There were not revivals that swept through the land that needed to sweep through the land. And so we should not be standing up as judges to our children and grandchildren and say that they're the ones who are losing all this, because they have received much of that from us as we passed it on down to them. And so that's the first lesson that you've got to learn, young people, is that life is not fair, and that many of the things that you're going to face are not necessarily of your doing, but you still have to live in the environment in which you're in and make the best of the situation that you might find yourself in. That's what these young men did. I want you to notice in verses 3 through 4 that it says that the king had gone to the cap, and the king spake unto Aspenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed. Now, that tells us a lot. There's a whole lot contained in that verse right there. First of all, I want you to understand that it's not just a coincidence that these young men were put in charge of the master of the eunuchs. What does that tell us? That tells us that these young men were made eunuchs. These young men had no future as far as a family goes. I know Sister Faye was saying in Sunday school this morning, talking about when Melissa was little, that she just wanted to grow up and get married and have children. These men, these young men, did not have that future to look forward to. They were made eunuchs. This was part of what they did to captives that they brought in. They did not want them to multiply. They did not want them to have family. They did not want them to enjoy the things that we enjoy. Their future was already planned out for them, and that future was that they were to serve the king. They were never going to get to enjoy having children and a wife and make a home. But this is what they inherited through no fault of their own. Now, did that just happen? No, it didn't just happen. It was the fulfillment of a prophecy. Now, I mentioned Hezekiah. Who was Hezekiah? At this point, these young men, who it tells us were the seed of kings, that were the seed of the elite of the nation of Israel, that these young men were the ones that were brought forward. Who was Jeconiah? Jeconiah was the king at that time. He was the great-great-grandson of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a good man. Hezekiah was a good king. There was a great revival that took place under King Hezekiah. What happened during King Hezekiah's life? You remember the story of how that Isaiah, the prophet, had come to Hezekiah and he said, God told me to come and tell you that you better get your house in order, for your days are numbered and you shall not survive the sickness that is upon you. And Hezekiah, tells us, turned his head to the wall and began to pray that God would give him a longer life, that God would spare him of the sickness. God heard his prayer. And he turned Isaiah around to come back into Hezekiah and said, God has heard your prayer. And as a sign, God turned the sundial back there to give a sign to Hezekiah that he would give him another 15 years of life. What happened in that 15 years of life? In that 15 years of life that he was given, he had a son named Manasseh. And Manasseh grew up to be king and took Hezekiah's place. And the Bible tells us that Manasseh did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He turned the people's hearts away from God. He led that whole nation away from God. And all that God had said was going to come on that nation came upon them during that period of time. Manasseh then had a son named Josiah. Josiah was a good king. He was a young man when that he took over as king, and there was a great revival under Josiah. But Josiah died in an early age, and then his son, through a series of events, Jeconiah was put upon the throne. And so we can trace Jeconiah back to his great-great-grandfather Hezekiah. Something happened when Hezekiah was healed and restored back to the throne. There were emissaries that came that came from Babylon. They were not at war with Babylon, but Babylon was a great nation. And the king of Babylon sent emissaries to Hezekiah. And the emissaries came to Hezekiah to bring him good wishes. They had heard that he was sick and that he had recovered. And so they come to bring good word, to bring greetings from another king of another nation. And what did Hezekiah do? He did something very foolish. He took the emissaries of the king of Babylon and he showed them all of his gold and all of his silver and all the things that God had blessed them with, took them into the house of God, the temple, which was filled with gold and things that that was designed for the worshiping of Jehovah. He showed them all to the emissaries of the king of Babylon, sort of bragging about how God had blessed him and all the wonderful things that they had had. And when this was all done, Isaiah came back to Hezekiah and said, Hezekiah, what have you done? And Hezekiah said, well, they all came in and I showed them all the great things that God has blessed us with. And here's what Isaiah told Hezekiah. You can find this in the 39th chapter of Isaiah or back in 2 Kings in the 20th chapter. Same recording. Here's what Isaiah said. Behold, the days come that all that is in thine house and that which thy fathers have laid up in store until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they take them away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. That was spoken 120 years before the event recorded in Daniel, and those young men were taken and made eunuchs in the king of Babylon's palace, just as prophesied. But they had received all kind of warning, but they had not turned back. I've got to move on. So, this was the world that these young men faced. They were made eunuchs because of what took place generations before them, but they had to face the consequences of those things. They were exiled. They were removed from everything that was familiar to them. Nothing that they had grown up with. And they were young men, probably in the age of 12 to 15. We know that Daniel, who was mentioned here, was carried away at a very young age. And he's mentioned here. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Daniel maybe as we get along here. But these men were exiled. They were ripped from their families. They were carried to a foreign land, and they found themselves in a bad situation. But you know what they did? They made the best of a bad situation. They didn't throw food at the guards. They didn't make fools of themselves in protest. They didn't try to cause a riot. They made the best of a bad situation that wasn't of their making, but they did the best they could under the environment in which they were. You know, there's great talent many times that comes from obscure places. King Nebuchadnezzar realized that. He realized that just because that he was the king over them, and because he had power over them, that didn't mean that they didn't have wisdom. And Israel had a reputation for having wise young men, men who were brought up in the nurture and admonition of God, and so their reputation had somewhat preceded them. And so Nebuchadnezzar realized that there was talent among these slaves, these foreigners, that could be used for the advancement and the furtherance of his kingdom. And he did a wise thing. He chose to use that talent as best he could. Young people, you're going to find yourself out in the world, and many times, perhaps in bad situations, situations not of your making. But the best advice that I can give you is make the best of that situation. And not only make the best of it, but let the character that is within you shine forward. And that's what I want to get to. These young men were exemplary. Exemplary in their appearance. It said, get those whose appearance is good. You know what I take that to mean? I take that to mean they kept themselves well groomed. They kept themselves looking appropriate. They didn't let their physical appearance go. That was important to them. This body that we have is a gift from God that allows us to function in the environment that we're in. And if you take good care of your body, I'm not going to say anything about long hair or short hair or jewelry, but you know when you're taking care of your appearance, when you look and have an attractive appearance. That was important. That was the first door that opened up for these young men. I can tell you that if I were, and I've done many, many interviews and tried to be as fair as I could be, but there's something within us that when a person comes in, the first impression they make makes a deep impression upon you. And as people would come in for interviews looking for jobs at the plant, and I would be doing those interviews, I tried to get deeper into those things. But if they come in looking like a slob, hair that hadn't been combed or was greasy and oily, and tattoos all the way up and down their arms, looking like bikers, it was hard for me, knowing that to employ them, it was hard for me not to let that have an influence upon my decision. I know we're supposed to be fair, and I tried to be, but let's be honest. Those are the way things are. These young men had a good appearance. They kept themselves, even though they were in captivity, they kept themselves looking well. They were men of learning. They had gotten some education. They had tried to, as best they could, prepare themselves. They were young men who had evidence that they were teachable, that they could be trained. I can tell you again, from experience in the world out there, that many times it's not the college degree that you might have, but it's your teachability, your ability to learn. Companies are willing to invest time, just as Nebuchadnezzar was. They're willing to invest resources to train you to become good employees. But that's what they're really looking for. And the fact that you've completed college or that you have gotten what education you started out to do, all that does is turn on a light bulb that says these people have the stick-to-it ability to finish what they start, and they have the evidence that they can be trained to be of value to whatever that you're seeking, whatever company that you're seeking to work for. So we learned that lesson from these young men. But most of all, what we learn is that these young men had character. These young men had character, and it becomes evident as we get further and further down in the story. Character is something that's important. You've heard me say it before, and I'll say it again. Character is not taught. Character is caught. They pick up that character from what they're exposed to. That's where we parents and grandparents come into play. Because our little children, the Aubreys and the Gigi's and the Bellas and all these little ones, they're catching the character of their parents, of their grandparents, and those that they're exposed to. Those are the things that they're picking up. Those are the things that are molding their thinking and making them into who that they are. That's why it's important for parents to have their children exposed to the right environment. Certainly church is a right environment, but a home needs to be a right environment as well, because all of those things contribute to the character. I've got to move on. The clock's going too fast. Verses 5 to 7. Let me read those. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishariah, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name Belshazzar, unto Hananiah of Shadrach, and unto Mashael, to Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. And so what happened here? What's happening here? Temptation is ever present before them. Folks, when you, young people, when you go out into the world and away from mom and dad's house, whether it's your choosing or whether you're thrust into that situation, and it's not always your fault. There's many cases where that young people, for whatever reason, their parents may be killed in a car wreck, and you may be put into the foster system. Not something of your choosing. Not something that is good or something that that is fair. But this is life. But these young men were thrust into a situation where that temptation was there. Now I can tell you from first-hand experience, and I was raised in a good home, but boy, the first week that I went to college, man, what temptations were there, because there was no longer mom and dad there to look over my shoulder and that I had to worry about finding me, because I was away from home and I had all of these temptations. These young men were offered the very best of what the world had to offer. They were offered food and drink from the king's table and offered to be educated free of charge, and the very best that the world had to offer for these young men. And folks, many of you young folks, as you go out into the world, if you've got talent, if you've got many of these characteristics, the world is going to swoop over you and try to change you to become like they are. They're going to give you temptation. There's going to be food. There's going to be drink. A young athlete. That's what happens to so many of these young men that come out of school as good athletes, and immediately they're taken to college and wined and dined, and the world's laid before them. There's money, there's girls, there's anything that they want is offered to them, and most of them do not survive with the character that they might have gone into, because they're not strong enough. The world and the temptations that are there were just as real to these four young men as they are to every one of our young people that have to go out and face those things. The world will offer you the best of what they have to try to get you to become like them. And then what did they do? The prince of the eunuchs changed their names so that they would try to forget who they were and become who they wanted them to be. They changed their names, and all four of their names had a reflection of Jehovah God in their very names. But when they changed their names, they changed them to names that had Belshazzar. Bel being the chief god that they worshipped. And the other gods were the moon gods and the earth gods and the fire god. And so they tried to conform these young men to their ways and make them forget who they come, where they come from, and who they are, so that they might become more like that the world wanted them to be. And people will do that. They may not change your name, but they will certainly try to get you to leave behind your archaic and crazy beliefs that there's a God who created this world. They'll try to get you to forget all the things that you learned in Sunday school, all the things that the preacher and those who tried to teach you about God, because they'll say that that there is no God. They'll say that the only God is the thing that you can acquire for yourself. They will try to do that to you just as much as they tried to do it to these four young men. And so, all young men and women today faced exactly the same challenges that these four young men faced. And make no mistake, it'll be there. It'll be there whether you want it or not. I told a young lady down at the Gospel Music School, what first year that I was chaplain down there. Man, she had a voice that I couldn't believe. I mean, she could sing, and she got up and sang, "Do you know my Jesus?" Tears were streaming down her face. And I'm telling you, there was a revival that night. There were several young people that got saved, and we had a revival meeting that night. But oh, what talent that she had. And I told her privately, well, I told her actually from the next morning at the devotion that I was doing, "You've got such talent, and the world is going to want you. And they're going to offer you everything. They're going to offer you fame. They're going to offer you popularity, money. Anything that you want will be laying at your feet because they can make money off of you. And they want you to be what they want you to be. And forget about this gospel singing. There ain't no money to be made in that. Don't you listen to them." I don't know what's happened to that young girl. But that's exactly the condition that these young men were in. And they're the same condition and the same situation that you'll be in. You know what the Apostle Paul said in Romans in the 12th chapter? He said, "And be not conformed to this world." That's what they were trying to do to these four young men. Conform them to the world in which that they had been thrust through no choosing of their own. "Be ye not conformed unto this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." See, Paul spoke those words well over 1,000 years after these young men were held captive in Babylon. But it is still the truth when Paul spoke it, and it's still the truth today. "Be ye not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that good and perfect will of God may be made manifest." And that's exactly what these young men did. In the 8th verse, it tells us that Daniel purposed in his heart. Daniel was the leader. These other three young men looked to him. What example was he going to set? He set the example. Some of you young people that are out in school, there's perhaps others out there who want to do what's right, who have a conviction in their heart, but they may not be strong enough to take that stand that they need. And they may be looking to you to take that stand. They may be looking to you thinking that you've got the strength and you need to look inwardly. You need to look inwardly and purpose in your heart to do what is right. That's what Daniel did. He purposed in his heart to do what's right. Right upbringing gives moral foundation for right actions. Now you listen to that. That's my words. I typed them out this morning. Right upbringing gives moral foundation for right actions. These young men had a right upbringing. They had a good character. They had examples set before them. And when they come down to the test, they had to look inward to who they really are. They had to look inward because there is where their character was. Their character was on the inside. It's not what other people think about you or other people say about you. That's reputation. Now, you want a good reputation, but that's what other people think about you. But character is what you are and what you do when nobody else is looking. When you're not under the auspices of mom and dad. When you're no longer in their house and have to worry about if you come in whether or not they're going to smell liquor on your breath or whether they're going to see that your pupils are dilated because you've been smoking weed or whatever. So that's not going to be there anymore. And I can tell you, and I'm going to give you, I made all kinds of mistakes, did all kinds of wrong things when that I left my parents' house and went to college. But somewhere instilled in my mind was this knowledge to stay away from drugs. To stay away from drugs. I've sat in cars while people have smoked marijuana. I've sat in a room while they've taken LSD. But that's one of those things that had been instilled in me that I knew that if I ever went down that road, that I may never come back. That it might consume me. And I thank God for that. I thank God for giving me the moral strength that I needed at that time to resist. Not that I was serving God like I should have, but in that area, at least, I had the moral strength to resist because of my upbringing and the things that I had learned. And so, the early years of your life are the formative years where that your character becomes substantial. It's where that it's formed. It's where that your moral compass is set. That's the problem with our young people, with our society today. So many out there have no moral compass. They really don't know what's right or what's wrong. They have situation ethics because that's what they see. That's what they've been exposed to. They go to school anymore, and the teachers have no moral compass. They themselves are living in situations that are scripturally wrong, that are morally wrong. They themselves now are embracing same-sex marriage, which the Bible is clearly against. And so the moral compass that's out there of the rest of the world doesn't know true north. It doesn't know the direction to God. But if you've been brought up in a God-fearing family and taught the things of God, you have something the rest of the world doesn't have, but you will still be put to the test. You will still come in that environment where that character that's within you has got to be strong. And Daniel purposed in his heart, and he turned to God. And God helped him. I've got to finish up here. Verses 9 to 17. The value and reward of temperance. Now I'm going to explain temperance in a minute. The value and reward of temperance. Verses 9 to 17. Let me read those real quick. What happened? Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should you see your faces worse likening than the other children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. And then said Daniel to Belshazzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Pulse is vegetables, by the way, and fruits, as opposed to meat and things that were not good for them. They were vegetarians, if you will, but their diet was important to them because they understood that the maintenance of their body was to not overly indulge it in things that was going to hurt it. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. So he consented unto them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar, took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Now, the value and reward of temperance was that these men excelled. They excelled in knowledge. They excelled in all these things. They were temperate in what that they did. Temperance and abstinence in all things. Now, I put temperance / abstinence as I wrote out some notes this morning because the Bible teaches us that we need to be temperate in all things and abstinence in some things. These young men recognized that wine was not good for them. That wine was not something that they should begin to indulge in. It would affect their senses. It would affect their ability to think. They could become a slave to it. And so the wise young men and the wise young women, they will not dabble in those things. They will be strong in character and turn away from those things. I didn't have the common sense to turn away from beer, and I never became an alcoholic. I never became a strong drinker. But I tell you what it did. I about flunked out the first semester of college, and I come to my senses and realized that I was not going to survive in that environment over at Morgantown at West Virginia University, because I didn't have the strength to resist the things that were hurting me. But I did have the common sense to say, I'm better off to go home and live at home and drive back and forth to a little community college and go there the first 2 years until I got enough strength that I could survive in the environment that I was thrust into. And so I would have been far better off had I had the strength to resist those things that I was taught to resist. But I didn't, and it harmed me, and it began to have an adverse effect upon me. And folks, it will you too. You might think you can take that little drink and you'll be all right. You might think you can take that little puff of marijuana, and just because they've legalized it in Colorado and other places, that it's okay. But it's a gateway drug, there's no question about it. It affects your senses, it affects your thinking, it affects the way you behave. And if you want to be something in life, you have got to resist those things as these young men did, because that they had a clear understanding that their youthful activity was going to have a dramatic influence and impact upon where their life was going to be. Maybe they wanted to have a wife and children, but life wasn't going to deal them that. They were going to make the best out of what they had. And folks, one of the things is being temperate and in all things, particularly in eating. There's nothing that can destroy your health any more than obesity. The Bible has more to say about gluttony than it does about any other thing else. It's a drug. Food can be a drug. Those of us that struggle with our weight, we know that. It can be like a drug. You've got to resist those things. But more than the food is the alcohol. And you know, we've got this covenant over here that says that we will not, that we will abstain from using alcohol as a beverage. These men were offered alcohol as a beverage. I'm not saying that it's going to make you a sinner, but I'm going to say that if you use it on a regular basis as a beverage, it's going to get control of you. Why would you want to subject yourself to that possibility to become a drunkard and to become one who is subject to alcohol? And that applies for drugs. Drugs were not a problem when that thing was written, but it is now. And the newer covenants have those phrases in to abstain from the use of drugs and pornography. Those things can be addicting. They can consume your life. And young people, you're going to face all of them out in the world. In your darkness of your room, when mom and dad aren't looking, just a couple of clicks away, and you can be involved in the worst pornography in the world. You might think nobody knows. But your character is what you are on the inside. And you're going to be faced with all of those temptations, and those things can ruin your life. I'm almost done. Finally, after 3 years, they graduated. After 3 years, 18 to 21, verses 18 to 21. Now, at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, they spent 3 years in training. They spent 3 years in temperance and abstinence, resisting all those things of the world because they had a higher prize. They had a vision out in the front of what they could be and what God could do with them. And so they maintained themselves through that period. And at the end of the 3 years, the king had said he should bring them in. Then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, and Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding, and the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his own realm. And Daniel continued even until the first year of the king of Cyrus. King Cyrus. I'm way out of time to get into this, but these young men's course of life were set. Read the rest of the book of Daniel, and what do we find? We find three of these young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, even though they had been put in places of great authority, they were cast into the fiery furnace because they would not bow down to a graven image. We all know that story. How did they get strong enough to be able to resist even to the giving of their life? It's because of the moral character that was within them. And all through their life, they had stood for the things of righteousness, the things of God. Daniel became the head of the kingdom. He became the one who the king depended on to run the whole kingdom. Not just King Nebuchadnezzar, but Daniel lived for the entire 70 years that they were in captivity. And it tells us in that last verse that he lived until to the reign of Cyrus. Cyrus is the one who allowed the Jews to go back to Jerusalem 70 years later. Daniel, God protected the nation of Israel through this young man Daniel, that he rose up to be over all the people, and they were protected and eventually allowed to go back to their land, all because that this young man served God. And God delivered the nation of Israel out of that captivity through Daniel. And what happened was, what that we see is that Daniel and these four young men, what happened to them was that they grew in favor with God and with men. Godly men and women, godly boys and girls, will grow in favor with God and with men. That's what happened to them. It tells us in a verse that Daniel was loved by the eunuch who had charge over him. The king loved Daniel. He was a man of character. He was a man of integrity. And even though that he was in a foreign land and in a place where that they worshiped other gods, his integrity brought honor to him, and bringing honor to him brought honor to the God that he worshiped and loved. And folks, that's the story. That's the story. And each one of you that goes out into this world will face those same situations. Let your character be such that you grow in favor with God and with men. There's no shame in men and people in position finding you to be people of good character. They will advance you. Folks, I'm one here to tell you that I advanced really well through the company that I worked for. I worked hard. I never caused trouble. I could get 8 hours work for 8 hours pay. I had a good report. I was actually left the company and went to Australia and resigned and left the company. Plant manager was in Australia 2 years later, and I met with him, and they asked me to come back to work. I'm not trying to puff myself up, but I'm telling you that you don't burn bridges behind you. You do the best you can in the environment that you're put in, and God can use that to His honor and glory and raise you up to where that you can have honor among men. But it always comes back to the character. That's my message. I'll keep going on and on. Brother Jake, if you've got a song, I want to leave that message with you young people. Many of us, our lives are already very well molded. Our careers are past. Now we're trying to set the right example for the young people, for the little ones that are coming along. But we have to continue to set the right example for you. And now many of you are going out and face these challenges in the world. What will you do when you get there? If you will rely upon God, remember the verse that I read out of Psalm. I was young, and now I'm old, but this I have never seen, the righteous forsaken, nor their seed begging bread in the streets. That has been true from the beginning. God will not forsake His people. He didn't forsake them even when they were in captivity. He raised up Daniel, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego that they might lead them and eventually deliver them. Go ahead, Brother Jay.